Thank you to Jennifer and to KPMG for the introduction. Can I first acknowledge that we meet on the land of the Kaurna people? Can I also acknowledge my parliamentary colleagues, a number of whom are here, and thank both KPMG and CEDA, David Byers, Hamilton Calder and Anne Howe from the National and South Australian divisions, respectively, for hosting this very worthwhile forum. It is good to be here today, not only because we're in my hometown of Adelaide, but also because I know there is no more important issue to people in Adelaide than water and the future of the River Murray. Ensuring we have enough water is one of the key challenges for this nation's future. And those who rely on the Murray have an instinctive understanding of how real and how important this challenge is. And right across the Murray-Darling, the effects of overallocation, drought and climate change have left the basin in crisis. It is a crisis for irrigated agriculture, a crisis for communities and a crisis for the health of the rivers. And all the communities who rely on the Murray are only too aware of how serious this situation has become, which is why this requires a national response. And tragically, over the years when the Murray most needed it, we have not had that national leadership. Since I commenced this job, I have been struck by how little was achieved over the last decade to address the water crisis in the Murray-Darling Basin. There has not been any sense of a coherent and coordinated approach to deal with this very complex and urgent problem. And against this backdrop of a worsening water crisis, the basin was centre court for the blame game. We have a very big ship to turn around and not a lot of time to do it. Climate change is drying our land and communities are hurting. So it was a very important step when less than 2 weeks ago, just a few months after taking office, we secured an historic agreement with the states for the long-term future of the basin and for all the Australians who rely on it. And today I want to talk with you about what this agreement means and where we go from here, including the tests for investment spending in the Murray and in the basin more generally. However, I first want to broadly outline the Rudd government's approach to water policy. We do have to work in cooperation with the states, but we also believe the Australian government should play a leading role on water. National leadership means leadership across the whole country to address the challenges faced by all Australians, whether they be irrigation communities or suburban households. It means protecting the rivers that provide our water, and it means investing wisely to get the best results for all Australians. National leadership means preparing Australia for the challenges of the future. And the Rudd government is taking that leadership by focusing on four water priorities, the first of which is taking action on climate change. We must understand and adapt to the impacts of climate change. In one of my first interviews after being appointed, it was put to me that I shouldn't be going to the Bali climate negotiations before I'd fix the Murray. Yes. Statements like this really misjudge the nature of the problem. The signs that the Australian climate is changing due to human influences are now clearly apparent. Earlier this year, the Bureau of Meteorology reported that 2007 was the sixth warmest year on record and that 16 of the last 18 years have been warmer than the long-term average in Australia. It also told us that 2007 was the hottest year on record in the Murray-Darling Basin in New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia. And in the basin, the total inflow to the system was about 2,100 billion litres in 2007, the third lowest inflow year out of 116 years of records. And this comes on top of the lowest inflow year on record in 2006. So if you take these 2 years together, 2007 and 2006, the two-year period ending in December 2007 is the worst two-year period ever, representing just 15% of the long-term average for 2 years. And looking to the future, CSIRO projects that temperatures will arise another 1 to 5 degrees by 2070. In those circumstances, and without a concerted effort, Australia's most populated regions face a ongoing shortage of natural water. This is why climate change will be at the heart of everything the Rudd government does on water. Climate change and water are, in effect, the two sides of the same coin. Failure to take action on climate change will exacerbate the water crisis. and moreover, a failure to understand and respond to the impacts climate change is already having on our traditional water supply would have serious consequences for communities. State governments around the country have recognised this, which is why desalination plants will be operational in Perth, Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney and southeast Queensland within the next 5 years. The national government has a key role to play in leading the battle against climate change, both in Australia and overseas. The national government also needs to build the scientific and technical expertise to understand how much water the basin's river and groundwater systems are capable of providing into the future. The CSIRO has been modelling a range of scenarios to look at the impacts climate change and other factors, like current and future groundwater use, plantation forestry and farm dam development will have in the Murray-Darling Basin. And so far, reports into 8 of the 18 subcatchments within the Murray-Darling Basin have been released, with a further report into the Lachlan and Macquarie Castlereagh being released today, and the results are sobering. In the Ovens catchment, which may prove to be an indicator for the Southern Basin, there is a risk of substantial reduction in average water availability from what we have experienced over the last century. Under the most pessimistic scenario, there would be a 45% reduction by 2030. That is just one generation from now. Under the most optimistic scenario, conditions would be largely unchanged. So the best science available shows us just how difficult it is to predict the future. However, one thing is clear, and that is that governments and communities need to be ready for the possibility of much reduced water availability in the future. Together, these reports will lay the groundwork for our efforts to adapt to the challenge climate change poses in the basin. And whilst some members of the Federal Parliament who represent the people of the Murray-Darling Basin may remain sceptical about climate change, their constituents are not. I have made several visits to Murray-Darling Basin communities and people are taking action. Irrigators at the Lower Lakes understand how important it is to safeguard against the impacts of climate change. Producers in the Lower Lakes region estimate they generate around $700 million per year for the South Australian economy, but they use just 17 billion litres of water from the Murray. And the problem is, while these irrigators don't use much water, their access to it is restricted by the declining water levels and rising salt levels in the Lower Lakes. A year or two ago, a Langhorne Creek winemaker anticipated future problems in the area and dredged a channel into deeper water to ensure he could continue pumping if the water level dropped. And people thought he was mad at the time, but it has proved to be a very sensible decision. With climate change creating greater uncertainty and increasing the likelihood of ongoing dry periods, the people of the Lower Lakes need a long-term solution to ensure they are not entirely reliant on the lakes. And people on the ground are working hard to diversify water supply options in the region because they understand how important it is that we protect against the impacts of climate change. The work that this government is doing on climate change, both globally and in Australia, is fundamental to the question of long-term water security. The second priority for national leadership on water is using water wisely. Climate change undoubtedly means we need to be able to do more with less. This is true for both rural and urban Australia. The Murray-Darling Basin supports around 70% of Australia's irrigated agriculture. In the process, however, an average of 2,000 billion litres of water is lost each year through inefficient storage and delivery systems. To put that into perspective, that's about twice what Sydney and Melbourne use collectively in each year. When you consider that the Lower Lakes irrigators have been using just 17 billion litres a year for the estimated $700 million in annual production, it is clear that there is enormous scope to do better. And this is why, as a key part of the COAG agreement, the Rudd government has agreed to provide up to $1 billion for Stage 2 of the Food Bowl Modernisation Project in Victoria's Goulburn Valley. This is a visionary project that, amongst other things, seeks to rationalise around 6,000 kilometres of open channel and to upgrade delivery and metering systems in order to bring the system into the 21st century. And last week I visited the region and it was remarkable to see just how old some of these channels are and the amount of water lost on the way to farms. In urban areas, the Rudd government has a $250 million rainwater and greywater program to help families invest in saving water at home. Water tanks might be a familiar sight in South Australian backyards, but there is still a lot to be done in terms of saving water in our everyday lives. There is also much we can do in terms of supporting water smart design, and we will provide $250 million for new and replacement water infrastructure in our cities and towns. While I am on the subject of using water wisely, I want to congratulate the households and businesses of Australia who have embraced water conservation in their everyday lives. In recent years, state governments have taken the tough and often unpopular decisions to enforce water restrictions, and nobody wants to be told when and how they can use water. But what many people are finding is that in many cases, saving water around the home does not have to be a huge burden. In Melbourne, for example, people are now using 22% less water per person than they were in the 1990s. And what is most impressive about this statistic is that the saving of 22% was achieved during a time without water restrictions. And whilst we want to work with the states to move away from long-term water restrictions, water conservation in our everyday lives needs to be a big part of the ongoing solution. And it staggers me that some politicians, including here in South Australia, are so shameless that they will stir up anger on water restrictions one day and demand action to save water supplies the next. If you want to be regarded as a community leader in this state, you cannot encourage conflict over water. We cannot play games with this issue. It is far too serious. Our third priority is to help develop new water supplies for our growing cities and towns in order to reduce reliance on rain-fed water catchments. Cities and towns need to diversify their water supplies. Desalination, recycling, and stormwater reuse all reduce our reliance on water source from rivers and groundwater systems, and connecting up water supply grids helps to spread the risks of more localised droughts. In Ballarat, for example, the Goldfields Superpipe, for which the Rudd government is providing $90 million, is linking the local water supply to the much bigger Goulburn system. Ballarat received just 3% of its usual inflow in 2006 when the Goldfield Superpipe project commenced. The superpipe is expected to be complete by the end of June this year, and without this measure, Ballarat was at real risk of running out of water. As I have already mentioned, desalination plants, recycling schemes and stormwater projects are being built around the country as a means of better securing urban water supplies. And importantly, the Rudd government's billion-dollar National Urban Water and Desalination Plan, which will support such initiatives, will also be used to leverage further urban reform in water by the states. Our fourth and equally significant priority is for healthy rivers and waterways. Healthy rivers support a healthy community and a strong economy. It seems obvious, but for a river to be healthy, it needs to have a good amount of water flowing through it. But in the Murray-Darling Basin, it is clear that we have a problem. We need healthy rivers and waterways to protect against algal blooms and salinity, which reduce our ability to use the water. Healthy rivers and wetlands also support regional economies through industries such as tourism, recreational fishing and sport. And I know this is an issue that Ken Matthews and others today have spoken to you about. The Rudd government is currently in the water market purchasing entitlement from willing sellers at a fair market price to put water back into the river. This $50 million investment is a down payment on the future of the basin. It is also the first time that the Commonwealth government has ever directly purchased water for the environment. Stakeholder input will be critical to the development of this program as we continue to roll it out in the years to come. And the need for more water to improve river health in the basin has never been more apparent. Most of us have heard of wetlands and red gum floodplains that are literally dying for a drink, of the dwindling numbers of water birds and native fish across the basin, and of the continuous dredging required to keep the Murray mouth from closing. And the problems, I am afraid, have been getting worse. Last week, I had the chance to inspect an acidified billabong at Bottle Bend near Mildura. The water that remains in that wetland has a pH of 2. That is seriously acidic. And the same problem is now emerging in the Lower Lakes. Also last week, a sixth-generation fisherman from the Lower Lakes showed me a freshwater turtle from Lake Alexandrina that has become so thickly encrusted with a type of marine coral that it looked like a rock with legs. Why? Because low flows into the lakes are causing salt levels to rise to dangerously high levels. What I saw highlighted just how important urgent measures like water purchasing are. But on top of buying water and investing in water-saving infrastructure, the basin needs a better long-term approach. And that is why the agreement we reached a fortnight ago was so important. It passes the test on delivering on three of the priorities I have outlined. It will see us using water more wisely. It will see us taking real action on climate change. And it will see us improving river health by securing more environmental water and by setting the first ever sustainable cap on surface and groundwater use in the basin. Currently, the cap on surface water use in the basin is based on an arbitrary line in the sand. It was certainly not based on science. Better than no cap, perhaps, but a long way short of a sustainable outcome. As part of last week's agreement, we will now see a truly sustainable basin plan developed by independent experts over the next 3 years. And this plan will set the first ever sustainable cap on the amount of water taken from our rivers and groundwater systems in the basin. The basin plan will identify basin-wide environmental outcomes for our rivers and include arrangements to improve water securities for cities and towns that rely on the rivers of the Murray-Darling for their drinking water. The basin plan will be crucial to both water security and river health right across the basin. And the basin plan will not favour one jurisdiction over another. It will benefit the basin as a whole. And I want to now explain some of the key elements of the agreement and some of the important next steps. As you may have heard from South Australian Water Minister Carlene Maywald today, the inclusion of critical human needs in last week's agreement was a good result for South Australians. Since becoming Water Minister, I have said many times that a cooperative national approach is in the best interests of all Australians who rely on the Murray-Darling Basin. And the further down the Murray you go, the more important cooperation becomes. This is something that I believe Minister Maywald and the Premier were very aware of, and I do want to acknowledge the important work that the Premier and Minister Maywald and the South Australian Government did in achieving the COAG agreement last fortnight. Through that agreement, the whole basin has united to prioritise the critical human needs of cities and towns who rely on the basin for drinking water. Now, a number of commentators, particularly here in Adelaide, called for the Commonwealth to simply take over control of the basin rather than pursue the cooperative approach agreed through COAG. I think you all know that the go-it-alone approach is simply not realistic, and the previous government attempted a hostile takeover of the basin but failed. We should remember that the drinking water needs of communities like Adelaide would not have been assured under the previous government's failed takeover. And the cooperative approach agreed last week means that critical human needs will now become part of the basin-wide plan. For the first time, we will have an independent Murray-Darling Basin Authority that will take over the existing functions of the Commission, the Murray-Darling Basin Commission, and will be wholly responsible for developing the new sustainable plan over the next 3 years. The authority will report to all basin ministers on most of the existing functions of the Commission. As part of the agreement, states have agreed to give the Commonwealth the power to approve this new basin plan and to put it into force. This is a substantial advance. This is a departure from the old Commission model, where progress was only possible if all states and the Commonwealth managed to reach a unanimous agreement. Under the new arrangement, states will be able to request a review of elements of the draft basin plan by the authority, but ultimately the Commonwealth Minister alone will make the final decision. And independent advice will be the basis for setting the cap for the basin rather than historical use and individual states' interests. This cap will determine how much water can be taken out of rivers and, for the first time ever, from groundwater systems in the basin. The basin plan is due to be completed by 2011, and states will then need to apply the basin plan into their next round of water resource plans and any amendment to existing plans. Now, much has been made about the fact that these plans don't expire until 2014 in the case of New South Wales and 2019 in Victoria. This has been a criticism including by those who were part of the previous government that put these timeframes into the Water Act, which was passed through the Parliament under the previous government. Can I say I absolutely agree that we cannot wait more than 5 years to see real on-ground outcomes in the basin. That is why it is so important to balance this new long-term solution with the more immediate measures about which I have spoken already, namely water purchase and investment in water-saving infrastructure. As I mentioned earlier, the Murray-Darling Agreement also provided the Rudd government with an opportunity to reaffirm our commitment to use water wisely. Our commitment to the Food Bowl project of up to $1 billion is expected to deliver around 100 billion litres for the River Murray and an equivalent volume of water to benefit irrigators and help them deal with the challenges of climate change. As I said before, around 2,000 billion litres of water is lost each year in the basin, as water evaporates from inefficient storages and through leaky channel systems. This commitment to stage two of the project is subject to a due diligence process that will be undertaken jointly by the Commonwealth and Victoria. And in addition to this project, the Food Bowl, the states and the ACT will be reporting back to COAG in July on their priority water-saving projects within the basin. And proposals from private irrigation corporations will also be considered in due course. As with stage two of the Food Bowl project, all project proposals will be subject to rigorous due diligence. It is important that these projects demonstrate value for money, that they can contribute to the long-term sustainability of the basin. As I said at the beginning, national leadership is about investing wisely to get the best result for all Australians. There is no point in spending money for no benefit. And today I can announce that before the Commonwealth invests in priority projects in the Murray-Darling Basin from the $10 billion, those projects will need to meet three key tests. The first test is that projects must deliver substantial and lasting returns of water to secure real improvement in river health. This means that the water saved can actually be delivered for environmental purposes. And these will reflect the Commonwealth's environmental priorities, including Ramsar-listed wetlands and other important riverine values, as well as the health of the River Murray itself. In the case of the Food Bowl project, these water savings can be directed to a range of existing icon sites along the Murray, such as the Gunbower, Pirikuta Forest and the Chowilla floodplain in South Australia. We cannot expect the Murray to deliver for us if we don't look after the Murray. The second test is that priority projects must go towards securing regional economies and supporting the local community. Priority projects must be capable of contributing to a long-term sustainable future for regional economies and communities in the context of climate change and reduced water availability into the future. In making such substantial infrastructure investments, we need to make sure that these assets will support and drive regional investment and development. And the final test is, of course, that the projects must deliver value for money in the context of the first two tests. By applying these tests, the Rudd government will provide national leadership in the Murray-Darling Basin. And by applying these tests, we will be building stronger and more resilient irrigation communities in the basin that can meet the challenge of doing more with less. We cannot make it rain and we cannot turn the clock back on past over-allocation nor the emerging reality of climate change. What we can do is respond to the crisis we face now in a coordinated way. What we can do is manage the system better. Over the next few weeks and months, this framework will be developed into a detailed transition and implementation plan for the new Basin Authority. An intergovernmental agreement will formalise the arrangements at COAG in July this year. And also, over the coming months, I will outline further our plans to help secure Australia's water supply for our regions, cities and rural communities. Today, I have placed particular focus on the Murray-Darling Basin in the context of a major step forward taken less than 2 weeks ago. But I have also made it clear that national leadership in water under the Rudd government means working cooperatively to deliver secure water supplies for all Australians. All that we do will be considered carefully. It will be based on what we know about our changing climate. It will seek to make the most of the water we have, as well as to secure new water supplies for the future. And it will make a material contribution towards restoring the health of our rivers, wetlands and groundwater systems so they can continue to sustain us all for many generations to come. Thank you very much.